Is it? It's on the sign. Sorry, I just came here for the first time. He was kindly quoting from one of the books I wrote, which he kindly took the trouble to read. I wrote one book called A Message to the Youth of India, and in so he was noting that in that book, I'd made a comment that superficially India got independence from the British, but actually the modern Indians are more slaves of the Western mentality, more Western than the Westerners. So the existence of this institute is a sign that things are turning round again. Our other professor from Mathura, your good name? He's a Goswami. You're a Vallabh Sampradaya Goswami?
Prabhu, I belong to Radharaman
Temple. Radharaman Temple, Hare Krishna. So you're... Oh, very nice. So, I just noted as when I came here, of course he's from a very great Gaurya Vaishnava lineage. Actually our ISKCON, our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, our heritage, our great acharyas, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they all have links with Vishvambarananda Goswami in the turn of the 19th, 20th century. He was traveling in North India with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who's our spiritual great grandfather. So anyway, I was just noting that, of course, that's his Vaishnav culture, but as I was coming to meet you, he was offering respects to me by bowing down on the ground. So I was just noting, I was first in India in the 1970s, and in those days it was quite different. I mean, I must say I'm very happy with the respectful welcome you've given to me. I don't deserve any respect, but as a matter of formality at least, because I'm speaking on behalf of Krishna in the Vaishnava Parampara. So that should be done, that respect should be offered. But when I was first traveling in India in the 1970s, then it was quite different actually, because that generation, they were mostly, it was like a fashion to be very disrespectful to sadhus. So times have changed. India is making progress towards our own culture. Because at that time, in the 1970s, it seemed that there had very few temples being built. Mostly only dealers were building temples. And that also, they were getting some tax reduction for doing so. And at that time, it seemed that most young Hindus, they wouldn't like to be seen going to a temple. So times have changed. And now, like I say, this Ayurvedic college, it's a symbol that India herself is taking more pride in her culture than she was previously. So Ayurveda, you're studying Ayurveda, and of course that's the science of life. It's primarily concerned with the body, maintenance of, and curing of diseases of the body. But ultimately, of course, Ayurveda has no meaning without understanding the spiritual background, because there's no meaning to maintaining the body unless the body is used for a useful purpose. Just like if there's some old jeep and it's broken down, there's no use to mend it unless you have some purpose to use it. If you're not going anywhere, then why bother to mend the jeep? You need the jeep to go somewhere. So in the same way, this body, what is the purpose of maintaining it? Why be healthy? So you may say, well, the obvious answer might seem to be that, well, it's no fun being sick. It's a cause of great discomfort. So that's true, but over and above that, why should we be healthy? What is the purpose? Now we see that most people live their lives without any, especially in the modern age, people live lives, they lead their lives with, apparently without any real purpose. If you ask them, they'll say, well, my purpose is to have a good career, be successful, get lots of money. Maybe the original, the immediate goal of many young people might be to go to America. So these kind of purposes in mind, which are not very meaningful actually, because if you have a good career, then what is that so-called good career? In itself, it's not very meaningful to have a list of letters after your name and to be recognized by a few people. It's not very meaningful. This human form of life that is recommended, Athato Brahma Jignyasa in Vedanta Sutra, the beginning of Vedanta Sutra is, now that we got the human form of life, we should inquire into the absolute truth. Because if we consider what is our situation, we want to be a success, right? Who's a success? Well, I guess our Mr. Vajpayee in Delhi. Of course, there's so many Vajpayees. I'm talking about the Prime Minister. You could say he's a success. It took him all his life to get there. And, you know, probably he's not going to be with us very long. You could say he's a success, and then George Bush, number one and number two, their successes, they gained a big position. But after all, what is the use of this big position? If you see in the ant heap, the queen ant has got a very big position among all the ants. But we don't take the ants very seriously, because they're, to us, they're only ants. So in the same way, if you become a George Bush or a Prime Minister or the President Abdul Kalam or whatever you become, it may seem a big position, but actually it's intrinsically it's no more important than that of being a queen ant or a queen bee. We become big, so-called big, for a very short time and in a very small pond. You become a big fish in a small pond. This Earth planet, after all, it's a tiny little ball in one huge universe. In the Vedic literatures, we understand that there are so many universes. This is only one universe. So our dreams to be big or to have a successful life or even to have a so-called happy life, to have enough money and a family, and these are all a very small way of thinking. Our life, after all, it's so short. Even if Ayurveda, in Ayurveda we should think, what is our ayu, how long we should live. But even if you live, thanks to Munial medicines, thanks to yoga, performing yogic practices, even if you live to be 100 or 150, most of us can't expect to live that long, but some people may live that long. Did anyone go to Kumbh Mela? Any of you visited Kumbh Mela? No one? You visited. So you'll see there are some yogis, they come down from the Himalayas, and their jata, it goes down to their ankles and to a few meters behind even. So it must have taken them a long time to grow that hair, right? Maybe 100 years to grow such long hair. So the length of their jata, that becomes a status symbol for yogis, to show how old they are. So even if you live, some of these yogis, they must have been living for 200 years or 300 years. Normally you can't do that. But by yoga practice you can do it. But even if you live for 200 or 300 years, then that is also just a blip in time. It's a very short period. So we should consider actually what is the purpose of our life. Now you're studying how to help people to live Niramaya. Actually, that's only in the shloka it's said like that. Because everyone is samaya, everyone has got some disease. Sharira vyadhi mandiram, the very body, there are so many diseases latent, just waiting to come out. You should know, you're studying Ayurveda. Or actually, just if you're a human being, you can understand. Because everyone has so many diseases. This human body is so amazing, it's so complex, that Even a tiny little part of the body can cause so much pain. If you get toothache, this, if you get this abscess behind the tooth, so painful. Or if you get an ingrowing nail, just a tiny little thing, so painful. The body is full of distress, full of disease. And we can say that medical treatment or Ayurveda, it's just to try to control that. But actually, disease must be there. You can't avoid it, especially in the modern age. People live very unnatural lives, just like we came here by auto rickshaw. It's a very ordinary thing to come by auto rickshaw. But actually, it's very unnatural that you're sitting in the company and there's this loud noise, and the driver himself is full of so much tension, thinking how to get enough money. So we're living very, very unnatural lives. And just this electric light, it seems very nice, you get some extra light. But even that is poisoning us. You know that? We're living in an electric smog. All around us, people are getting cancer. They're wondering how we're getting cancer. Even the electric light contributes to that. Everything. Even the water we drink. The water, you either just take it from a plastic bottle, and that itself is supposed to be pure, but the plastic itself is impure. Or you get it from the corporation, and so it's all mixed up with so many chemicals. Everything, the food we're eating is full of chemicals. Everything is contributing to disease. So even if we lead a very natural way of life, then still we're going to get disease. So what to speak of this modern, completely unnatural way of life, which apart from the poisonous food we eat, apart from the poisonous air we breathe, apart from the poisonous water we drink, there are so many poisonous thoughts coming in our mind all the time. So much stress and tension. Kaam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, all these we're supposed to avoid, but modern society is promoting kaam, krodh, especially kaam, krodh, and lobh. Kaam, that's everywhere. They're promoting that anyway, you know better than me. That movies, TV, advertisements, simply promoting lust. And anger, violence is everywhere. They're promoting it. TV is promoting, cinema is promoting it. How it's good to have a big strong body and walk up to someone and punch them in the face. And lobh is being promoted. Buy this, buy that, get more money, show off your prestige, wear some designer jeans, wear some designer sunglasses, even in the winter when there's not a strong sun, because you have to show I'm wearing Ray-Ban sunglasses. And show that you have a very expensive watch. Make sure everyone sees it. So promoting greed, that you should have so many fancy Seiko watch or a Rolex watch and Levi jeans, show off. Then you become greedy. I have to get money to show all these things. I have to. It's no use just to have a Maruti car. I have to have a Cielo or something like this. So in this way, lust, anger, and greed are being promoted. So this creates poison actually in the consciousness. And that itself leads to so many diseases. Poisoned consciousness. So many diseases are going to come. So Ayurveda, we can say that is just to try to manage, to try to keep it under control. But by nature, there is disease in material life. Actually, you are quoting that this very body is a symptom of disease. What is that disease? Bhavarog. Bhavarog means the disease of getting born. Getting born itself is a disease. What is the disease? The disease is that we are in material consciousness. This is the first psychosymptomatic disease, is the body itself. Because we're in contaminated consciousness, we get a body. Therefore, that is recommended that one should try for moksha. Moksha means that your consciousness becomes purified and then you don't get any body. No more material body. So this is the purpose of the Krishna Conscious Movement actually. To bring the dynamic spiritual understanding to all fields of study. But Ayurveda actually needs this. Ayurveda without this spiritual understanding, Ayurveda is nothing. Without understanding that the body is only the tabernacle of the soul, and ultimately the soul is more important than the body. That is required to be understood. And even from a practical point of view of treatment, that if doctors, if they tell their patients that whatever you're doing, whatever your disease may be, that you have to take up spiritual life. Actually, the doctors should be gurus. They should instruct people that the cause of all your problems, actually, it may be your eating habits, it may be your lifestyle, it may be your drinking habit, whatever it may be. But the ultimate cause of all our diseases is lack of knowledge of our spiritual existence. So really the doctor should instruct everyone that you require, as a human being, as a jiva atma who's got a human body, you require to take up spiritual practices, without which your human life is completely meaningless. Yeah. Human life we get, labdva sudurlabhamidam bahusam bhavante, manushyam arthadam anityam api hadhira. In the Bhagavatam, Krishna says that this human form of life is attained after many, many, many births. So having got it, we should use it properly. So having got this human birth, if we use it like an animal, then actually we're not really a human being at all. What does that mean to use it like an animal? Because the animals, what do? Ahara nidra bhaya maitanamcha. The animals are eating, sleeping, fearing and having sex. That is animal life. So in human life, if we're only eating, sleeping, having sex and fearing others, then we're not human beings. Then we are narapashu. We have a human body but animal-like consciousness. So really you should teach your patients that simply to, now I'm going to treat your disease. But if you get healthy and you simply go back to an animalistic way of life, then there's no use to your being treated whatsoever. Real human being means that you have to take up spiritual life. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending, the animals do, and human beings do. What is the difference between a human being and an animal? Dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesham. Dharma, or the opportunity to investigate the higher purpose of life, that is the prerogative of human life. So if we don't take up spiritual life, then what are we? An animal. What is a human being? Human being is an animal plus religion. So A plus B equals C, C minus B equals A. So human being minus religion is only an animal. So we should tell people that if you live like an animal, then you can expect to get so many diseases, and when you die you will get birth as an animal. So the very least you can tell your patients is, don't be an animal in this life, don't live like an animal in this life, because if you do, you'll have to become an animal in the next life. And in this way your human life is spoiled. What is the purpose of life? We should understand. The purpose of life, the purpose of having this body, is to get free from getting other bodies. We want to have a very healthy body. But ultimately, what is the use of having a healthy body? Anyway, it's going to die. Whether you make it healthy by exercises, by yoga, by medicine, anyway, it's going to die. So Ayurveda or allopathy or homeopathy or naturopathy or whatever system, whatever it is, it's only a stopgap measure, because anyway the body is going to die. So then we may say, why bother to treat the body at all? Actually, there's no use to treat the body. There's no use to having a healthy body unless you use the body in a proper manner. Just like there's no use to having a vehicle unless you use it for some useful purpose. The vehicle, it's simply to have a nice car that has no particular meaning. You have to know where you're going. So in the same way we have this human form of life, we should know that the purpose of this human form of life is that in this human life we have sufficient intelligence by the grace of God to consider what is the purpose of this life. And understanding the purpose of life is to get free from birth and death. In this way we should use the body. So then the next question comes, then, well, how do you get free from birth and death? First of all, we should understand what is the need. The need to be free from birth and death. That there's no use to living a healthy life. If you're simply living for the sake of animalistic sense gratification, there's no use. So, human life is meant for self-realization. This we should understand. To understand actually who I am. Am I this body or am I something else? Usually if I ask you, who are you? What will you answer? Who are you? Can you answer? You should be able to answer. Who are you? Who are you? What is your name? Antarbret Singh. So Singh, that means you would be identified with Kshatriya caste from North India, presumably. Alright, so now please sit down. So now we have understood that you are Mr. Singh from North India. This much you've understood. And you can also say, I am a student of Ayurveda. But is that really you? How old are you?
20.
20, okay. So you're 20 years old. Then we may ask, where were you 25 years ago? Maybe in another form of life. That's a good answer. Thank you very much. Please sit. So you've understood that the identification you have with this body, I am Mr. Singh from North India, I am a student of Ayurveda. So this is only temporary, that I existed before this body, and after this body ceases to exist, I shall continue to exist. So can you all accept that, at least theoretically? Can you accept that? Your nice body, now it's nice, you're young, but after some time all the lines will come. Sorry, it happens to everyone. So, this body is temporary, but I am eternal. Can we accept that? Yes? No? Maybe? Yes? I am eternal. If this body is me, then really life is very, very meaningless. Because like I say, it's just a very short time we're in this body. The first thing we have to understand, this we understand from Bhagavad Gita and from all the Shastras, is that the soul is eternal. I am the soul. I am not the body. So that's good news, because the body is temporary and it's full of suffering. So then, the purpose of life is to understand what is my actual position. Who actually am I? We're working so hard for this body. Let me get a degree. Let me get a good job. Let me so much time we work to get some position for this body. We get a house. We get a car. We get so many things. But ultimately, within actually a very short time, this body is going to be finished. So real intelligence is to consider what is my life beyond the existence of the body. What is my eternal life? How can I act in a manner that will be for my eternal benefit? Now you're acting for your future benefit, isn't it? Studying means you're acting for your future benefit. Probably, if you had the chance, you wouldn't study at all. If you had enough money, maybe you'd just go to parties or I don't know what you'd like to do, something like that. You just enjoy it. But you're studying because you're thinking, well, I have to get a job, I have to do something to maintain my body and my future family, like that. But if we consider that this is all very temporary, so I should act, of course we have to act for this life also, but we have to consider what is our eternal benefit, that this body will drop down dead fairly soon. If we live to be 70 or 80, it's not much time. I'm just thinking now, I'm 46. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe I have 20 years, maybe. It's not much time. If I think of the last 20 years, it's not like that. So we don't have much time. So how can I act in a manner that will be for my eternal benefit? If I understand that I am eternal, this body is temporary, but I am Atma, I am eternal. How should I act in a manner that is for my eternal benefit? This is the most important education. Actually, it doesn't matter whether you're studying Ayurveda or whatever you're studying. Without understanding who am I and what is for my actual eternal benefit, then it's all superfluous knowledge, everything that we study. The most important thing we have to understand is who am I and what is my eternal situation? What is that activity which will be for my eternal benefit? Because I'm an eternal being. So like I say, in Vedanta Sutra, that begins with Akato Brahma Jignasa. Now we have to inquire into Brahma, into spiritual reality, into the absolute truth. To understand more than the Brahma. To understand more that this is my name, this is my caste, this is my country, this is my body. Who am I? So from Shastra, we understand, it's simply stated, Aham Brahmasmi, I am spiritual by nature. I am not, this body is not me. You can chop off the finger, you can chop off two fingers. The body will continue to exist. You chop off the head, the body will cease functioning. But the soul will continue to exist. So who am I? I am the soul which is presently giving life to this body and previously gave life to so many bodies, but I am not the body. I am spirit soul. So when we go away from this body, where shall we go? That depends upon our present activities. But we should understand that as long as we get one body after another, then simply we have to suffer, whether in human body, or animal body, or fish body, or insect body, or tree body. Life in this material world is full of suffering. So how to get free of suffering when by nature we are, our nature is to desire happiness. We want to be happy. But if we analyze, we can't be happy in a situation in which we have to die and we have to suffer disease. That means material life. In every material body we have to die, we have to suffer disease. So we should come to that position where there is no death, no disease. No death means no birth. So no birth, no death, no old age, no disease. That means to come to the spiritual platform. So what is that? How are we to understand? In Ayurveda, you can analyze to some extent physically. You can feel what is the pulse. You can look at the eyes. You can analyze in so many ways. But to understand spiritual reality, you can't analyze in a physical way, because spiritual by nature is different to the physical. That is the very nature of spirit. Sometimes people say, well, prove that it's spirit, or show me God. But we can't see in a physical manner, because spirit by nature is very subtle. Spirit by nature is different to that which is material. But we can understand the presence of the spirit by the very presence of life within the body. Just like in any language of the world, when someone dies, they say, he has gone away. Isn't it? In every language. Chale gaya. Not gone. In Bengali, chale gaya. Any other languages? Where are you from? From? Yourself? From Manipur? From Manipur? Where are you from? From Manipur. How do you say Manipuri? I know. When someone dies, what do they say? In Manipuri? Gone away? Silek means gone away. In every language. You see, it's different to Indian language, other Indian languages. So in every language of the world, when someone dies, they say gone away. So who went where? If someone is crying, oh, my father died. You say, he's there? He's lying there? No, no, he's gone away. He's not gone away, he's there. No, no, he's gone away. Then who went away? If the body is lying there, then who went away? All the life, you were thinking, this is my father, but now you're saying he's gone away. It's the same body. So just that we say he has gone away, this means that intuitively we all understand that there's a soul in the body which goes away from the body, isn't it? So practically, all over the world, in every language, it's accepted that there is a soul which goes away. It It also means that when the father goes away, if we think that the body is the father, that means we never actually joined. We were thinking this body is my father, or that body is my father. But we never actually knew who he was. So to understand this spiritual science of who actually we are, we have to adopt a spiritual methodology. Just like in Ayurveda, there's a certain technique to study, isn't it? It's different to Western medicine. It's a different approach altogether. Absolutely different. You're studying the same thing. You're studying the body, sickness, and how to cure it. But it's a completely different approach. In Western medicine, there's no such concept of kapha-tu-vaya. There's no, it doesn't mean anything. They just see what's the condition and give an injection. That's all. It's symptomatic treatment. They don't try to see what is the root cause. So it's a completely different approach. So in the same way, to understand what is spiritual life, we have to adopt the right methodology. We have to take the proper process. So the process to understand spiritual knowledge is the of course there are different systems, beginning with dhyana and yoga. But as Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Raja Vidya, Raja Yoga, Pavitra Mita Uttama, that this process of bhakti yoga, this is the topmost method of spiritual realization. So to understand who we are as spiritual living beings, one has to study from a guru. That is the system in any Vedic system of knowledge. Of course, now Ayurveda is done in a college like this. But traditionally, you have to go to a guru. It's institutionalized now, but the system is you study and the guru guides you. But how does he guide you? According to Shastra, you have to Ayurveda. Now they're making medicines like this, like Broncovin and Munipyrin. So these are, you can say, modern kinds of Ayurvedic medicines. But they're all, ultimately it's all based on Charak. You have to follow what is given in Shastra, isn't it? So in the same way, to understand what is spiritual knowledge, you have to take knowledge from Shastra. Shastra means that knowledge which is given by rishis, which that is considered a purusharth. That is knowledge not given from any by any normal human being, but knowledge given by God. So this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, that this must be accepted. That there is God, there is the Supreme Being, and He gives us knowledge. And if we follow the process of studying from Guru, the Guru teaches according to Shastra, then we can understand what is spiritual life, who am I, and how we can get free from birth and death. And actually, all the original Indian culture, of which Ayurveda is part, was based on this. How to get free from birth and death? By understanding my spiritual nature. So like I said, there are different processes for understanding the spiritual nature, which jnana, yoga, and bhakti, these are the three principal processes. But as Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, bhakti is the supreme method for understanding spiritual life, because bhakti links us directly with Krishna, who is the supreme spiritual living being, who is the, even there, praising Dhanvantari. But of course, he's also mentioned as the Vishnu avatar. So that Lord Vishnu, out of his kindness, comes as Dhanvantari to give this knowledge to human society, how to live a relatively healthy life, for what purpose? So that we can cultivate knowledge of Krishna. When we say Krishna, we mean Vishnu. Vishnu, of course, that's another controversy. But at least from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that the source of all Vishnu forms is Krishna, who is the supreme spiritual living being, or in modern English terms we can say God, Bhagavan. So he is the supreme personality of Godhead, supreme living being, the worship of whom, the service of whom, devotion to whom is the very meaning of life. That is our very intrinsic nature. But we, aham brahmasmi, I am living, I am a jivatma, I am spiritual by nature. But what is our spiritual nature? What do we do as spiritual beings? In this material world, we eat, we sleep, we fight, we have sex, we are wrongly, and so many things.
do we do in spiritual nature? What do we do in the liberated position? So from Shastra we understand that in the liberated position we reside in Vaikuntha or in the Lok Vrindavan and serve Krishna eternally. And that service in itself is full of the topmost transcendental happiness. Just like we find here in Manipal, it's very popular. There's always some party going on, isn't there? Party after party, day and night practically. This is party land. So that's what's going on in the spiritual world. It's called Nitya Mahotsav. There's an eternal party going on. But there's no hangovers. There's no exams the next day. There it is Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. Everything there is of totally pure spiritual existence. In this material world we go to a party and everyone's trying to impress everyone else. Who's got the fancy, who's wearing a fancy shirt and who can tell the best jokes and all this kind of thing. But there's no such competition in the spiritual world because everything is centered on Krishna, who is the supreme, lovable, enjoyable person and very happy one Krishna is leading. Simply joking, dancing, not irresponsible. He's also Vishnu, he's living out in the world also. But in his playful aspect, he is Krishna. And he is Radharana. He's enjoying with Radharana. But that enjoyment with Radharani, that's not like this material enjoyment boy-girl which so often ends in divorce and abortion and so many bad things. But that is Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. That is Chinmaya Rasa. That is of the spiritual nature. There's no disappointment. In the Leela of Radha and Krishna, there is no disappointment. It is simply full of all pleasure and the spiritual pleasure, and never ending, ever increasing. So the aspiration of the pure devotee, the devotee of Krishna, is to join that leela to serve Radha and Krishna. In this material world, no one wants to be a servant. To be a servant is considered not a very good position, but to be a servant of Krishna, that is the position of topmost spiritual bliss. So that is the ultimate goal of life. So many people may come and say, well, the goal of life is this or that or the other. But at least as much as we have understood from the Vaishnava Parampara, from all these Shastras, the ultimate goal of life is to understand Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his topmost enjoying mode. Everyone wants to enjoy. Real enjoyment is with Krishna in the spiritual world. So the purpose of life, or the purpose of having a healthy body, is not simply to be healthy for its own sake, but so that we can cultivate our original consciousness, Krishna consciousness. We can cultivate this understanding that I am the eternal servant of Krishna, who is the supreme, blissful enjoyer. I'm meant to be with Krishna. I'm meant to be eternally happy. I'm meant to be 24 hours eternally in a party with Krishna, in a party with no disappointment, only ever increasing bliss. That is the nature of the spiritual world. So in this material world, if we are to take up this spiritual development of Krishna consciousness, we have to lead a very pure life. That's also, in Ayurveda, you can also recommend that if you lead a even from a material point of view, a pure life, just like in our Krishna conscious movement, no meat eating, no garlic or onions. That's also Ayurveda. Modern medicine is recommending garlic. From what I know in Ayurveda also, that's not recommended. Or in Shastra in general, that's not recommended. So, a pure diet, of course we take Krishna prasad as food offered to Krishna. No intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. Sex is for procreation of children within marriage. Live like a gentleman. Like this. So lead a very pure life and cultivate bhakti sadhana. In human life, everyone should have some sadhana. Traditionally, in Indian culture, everyone was following sadhana. Everyone would rise early in Brahma Mahatma before dawn and take a bath, and everyone would do some puja, some japa, some dhyana, something like this. Nowadays, people are getting up as late as possible, 10 o'clock if possible. Otherwise, 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock, as late as possible. But this is actually, even from the health point of view, it's not good.
What do you say?
The early morning hours, that is, if we rise in that time, that is good for spiritual health, mental health and physical health also. Whereas if you sleep through the dawn, actually according to Shastra, if you sleep through dawn, that in itself is sinful. That even before you start your day, the failure to rise early in the morning is considered sinful. So, in English they say, early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy and wise. So we should rise early and cultivate spiritual life. There's no better way to start the day. In the morning when it's very peaceful and the nectar is coming down from the heavens, the whole atmosphere is so charged with sattva guna. This is the time for practicing spiritual life. And then in the day, whatever we may be doing, and then again in the evening, before taking rest, but then we should cultivate spiritual life. This is the best way to live human life. So we're not saying that anyone has to shave their head and become like us. But whatever you're doing, be a doctor, but you should understand that the ultimate purpose of this body is only a spiritual purpose. Simply to have a healthy body in and of itself is not of no value. Because you see, there are many buffaloes and pigs that have very healthy bodies, but they're not elevated in consciousness. So the purpose of having a healthy body is only to assist the development of consciousness, ultimately to spiritual consciousness, to Krishna consciousness. So we are recommending from Shastra, from our own experience, that the best method of spiritual realization, which gives purpose to life and is recommended in Shastra, is Bhakti Yoga, and especially in this Kali Yuga, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nas Jeva, Nas Jeva, Nas Jeva, Zathira Nita. In this Kali Yuga, there is actually no other way of spiritual realization but to chant Hari Nam, the names of Lord Hari, which was what you were doing, and you were very kindly joining with us. So we will request you to please continue chanting Hare Krishna. That will be for your tremendous benefit. The human life becomes enriched and becomes purposeful by chanting Hare Krishna and by understanding our relationship with Krishna. So this is only a very brief introductory talk. We have a few books here which describe this subject matter in more detail. So we would request that you could take some of these books, try to understand this in more detail. Yeah, that science of self-realization, you have that Bhagavad. We have a few books here, Bhagavad Gita as it is, Atma Sakshatkar Ka Vigyan, very nice book. Yes, I teachings of Lord Chaitanya in Kamala. The scientific basis of Krishna consciousness. Raja Vidya, I was just saying, quoting it. Janma or Mrityu Se Pare, all these different books. So, does anyone have any questions about this, please?